You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We're live, pal.
Hey, we're live, pal. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the A-Side Live Chat at MMAfighting.com on this fine Wednesday early afternoon, late, early, whatever it is over where our guest is. She's on the East Coast, right? Yeah, she's in Florida. Anyway, joining us this week, back on the A-Side, Kristen King. Kristen, how's Florida these days?
Florida is the same cesspool it was when you last talked to me. That's okay. Right now, it's a little bit cold. It is one of those random cold fronts that we're getting. So I woke up to about like 40 degree weather. And as a Floridian, you would know that anything less than the 80 to 90 degree range is cold. So if it's 79, I'm putting on my fuzzy pants and like a long sleeve sweatshirt.
Sounds miserable. Cold Florida sounds miserable anyway, from what people have described to me. Cold Florida sounds even more miserable. Casey, how's Englewood? Still up to good? I see you've rearranged your studio in the back.
Just changing some things around, you know, getting, you know, spicing it up, you know, moving things, you know.
Is it out of boredom or necessity?
I'm constantly making improvements, you know. It's like, it's like every day 1% better. Every day 1% better. That's what I say.
You should write a book about winning and learning.
He's thinking about it.
You sly one, Casey. Win or learn, anyway.
Win or learn. Of course, you guys know the drill. I don't have to explain it to most of you, but for those of you who are joining us for the first time, this is the A-Side Live Chat on MMAfighting.com. I am Jose Youngston. I guess overcast Arizona. It's been overcast for God knows how long. Anyway, you can ask us questions in the YouTube section, the comment section on the site, or on Twitter, and we can answer them. We were having a thrilling conversation on movie mistakes until we started the show. So if you want to chat movies, specifically horror movies, since Kristen King is here, she's our resident horror expert, have at it. But without further ado, Casey, what is our first question?
First question. There we go.
From Trumbo on the site, Woodley versus Luque. Man, can't they give Woodley an easier fight than these killers? He hasn't won a round in the last three fights. What do you think, if anything, he has left in the tank? Or do you think he's just getting some extra paychecks? Well, he can, and he really has no ambition left at this point. If he loses again, we're getting into Barao-type skid after losing the belt. So, yes, as reported by I don't know who was the initial report, but it's on our site. I'm sure we cited it back, but Tyron Woodley is linked to a fight against Vicente Luque at UFC 260, if I remember correctly, in March. Woodley has lost to, well, he lost to Usman. He lost his belt to Usman, and then he lost to Gilbert Burns, who's the current number one contender. And then he lost to Colby Covington, who should be the number one contender after Gilbert Burns. But Colby Covington is, of course, tied to Jorge Masvidal, which will probably solve that dilemma. So, as they say in the business, Tyron Woodley's not losing to bums. Now he's fighting Vicente Luque, who did Vicente Luque just beat?
I think it was Nico Price. Was that knockout?
I think that was Jacksonville, and then he fought Randy Brown after at the Apex. Has he fought anyone since?
Luque is coming off a victory over Randy Brown, Nico Price, Brown. And then a loss to Stephen Thompson, the decision loss at 244.
Yeah, UFC 244 in New York, yeah. The Vicente Luque knockout of Randy Brown was my dark horse for knocked out of the year, only because I was at that fight and it was in an empty arena, and the sound of Vicente Luque's knee on the dome of Randy Brown is something I will never forget. It was very jarring. Anyway, Kristen, what do you make of Tyron Woodley's skid, and why can't he get an easy fight in the UFC?
Man, one thing about Tyron Woodley, he's not fighting any bums. Like you said, he's fighting these top contenders, and he's still in the top 10, I want to say. I feel like he's like number 7, something like that. And I think this is more about a fight of like trying to certify his contendership status, if you will. I think that he wants to prove to himself that he can still be that former champion again. Because remember, Tyron Woodley was the former welterweight champion. And then obviously he has since hit a slump since then. But I think he wants to continue to prove to people that he is of championship caliber, and he's not going to say no to these names. And I think for Luque, this is a fantastic fight, almost as like, I'm the new contender. And this is a perfect name to add to his resume. I think they gave him the Steven Wonderboy Thompson fight with that same mentality. Like, this guy could be the next best thing at 170. Obviously he did not win that fight, but he put on a great scrap. Then he comes back with these two knockouts. Now they're going to give him another upper echelon type opponent to see if he can establish himself as one of those contenders that could be challenging for the title soon.
Yeah, Casey, going off of what Trumbo said, like, Woodley's lost these fights, but he's lost, what, 25? He lost 25 minutes to Kamaru Usman. So he lost 5 rounds against Usman, 5 rounds against Burns, and 5 rounds, or like, what, 4.5 rounds against Covington? Yeah. 4.5 rounds against Covington before his rib went out. So it's not even like he's losing close fights. He's getting beat down from pole to pole.
Yeah, but to call them this whole, like, oh, he's Hinnenbrow is getting demolished and finished. Let's give Woodley some freaking credit. Yeah, he didn't beat Usman, but Usman, who knows? Usman might be the greatest welterweight we've ever seen. We just don't know that yet. And then we lose to Gilbert Burns and Covington, 1-2, basically. What is the big deal? Woodley is 37, 38 now. He's clearly, not clearly past his prime, but it's hard. He's 38. So he's 38 years old, guys. Let's give the guy a break. He's still competitive. Yeah, he lost these fights, but like, Brown got like stretchered out in multiple fights. Outside of the rib injury, Woodley just kind of lost those fights. He didn't get beat up. I mean, he wasn't, just like his face was like just, whatever, just a meat grinder. But I don't want to oversell the Tyron Woodley's just not motivated. Maybe he's just not as good as he used to be because he's freaking old. Let's give the guy a break. He was number 1 for a long time. Now he may be number 7, number 8. But this Luque fight kind of rules, because Luque is kind of the top level gatekeeper. Who's he lost to in the last 5 or 6 years? Leon Edwards.
And Leon Edwards and Usman. And did he lose to Usman on The Ultimate Fighter?
No, he lost to Michael Graves.
I think Michael Graves won that season, if I remember.
Yeah, and Michael Graves got kicked out because I think, is he domestic violence? Maybe.
Something like that.
Yeah, so in the last recent memory, Luque has only lost to championship-level fighters. And that's what this fight is. Let's see if Woodley is still a championship-level fighter, or if Luque can make that jump into that next echelon, because right now Luque is obviously a great action fighter, but he can't beat those top 5 guys. Here's your opportunity.
I was gonna say, do you guys think that there's any concern? Because I believe Tyron Woodley said some comments, I think after the Gilbert Burns fight, like leading into the Colby Covington fight, he said that like he wasn't there, and I think a lot of people took that at face value, like, oh, well, he's definitely on a steep decline since he had the championship. Maybe that's why they're trying to tie it into the whole Barao type of situation.
He definitely said when he lost to Usman, it's like he was watching himself lose and he couldn't stop it. Like, he knew what he had to do and he couldn't pull the trigger. And similar things with Gilbert Burns. And I just think Colby Covington might be the second best welterweight in the world after Kamaru Usman. And that fight ruled against Kamaru Usman. So they could just be 1A, 1B right there. I think a lot of people are making a lot of what Tyron skid because of his comments declaring himself the greatest welterweight of all time before the Usman fight. And then all of a sudden right into this skid. So I think people are also relishing, and unfairly, they're probably relishing the fact that Woodley is losing, because he had the fight against Maya and he had the second fight against Thompson. And then he clearly wasn't happy with the UFC when he beat Darren Till. So I just think people kind of got tired of Tyron. I know fans got tired of Tyron Woodley unfairly. He also went on Ariel Helwani's show and said that when he was champion, he was buying cars and houses and blowing all of his money. And now he doesn't have any of that. So maybe he's fighting for a paycheck, which is fine. But I just think the lot – I agree with Casey says. It's not like Brow, and I'm even going to throw Johnny Hendricks into that mix where the decline was just crazy drastic and he was getting finished left and right or having these one-sided losses. But I'm not ready to put him into that category yet. But, yeah, this Vicente Luque is gonna fight is going to be very telling.
Yeah. I like the fight. Good matchmaking. Mm-hmm. Although
it's three rounds, too.
Three rounds. Although if I was Woodley – I know the UFC doesn't do this, man. I would take a guy like outside the top 30, you know, just whoever lost on the contender series. I don't know, but UFC doesn't work that way. So here we are.
Have him fight Lizez.
Yeah. Oh, don't. Even way below Lizez.
Jessica Crystal Crew, yay, Kristen, girl power, and that's on Megan Anderson. I'm sure we're going to get questions on the Megan Anderson, Casey Kenney, Sugar Sean situation moving forward. Yes. Thank you, Jessica, for the input. I know we have a question on it coming up, so I didn't want to, unless you want to tee it up now.
Yeah. Sorry, I was about to, just in my head, and I'm just thinking of the whole situation, like.
I know our colleague Alex Savas has many thoughts on it too. So if she's on next week, we'll talk about it again.
All right. Because this never gets old.
MMG2K20, the bag on the site. I know the whole Ottman's bag situation is getting old. It will literally never get old in my book. But surely Dana knew what was in the bag. He can get the FBI involved to watch one person's house, but he can't get information regarding the contents of a bag, something that is an actual threat. Also, did you see the clip of Casey Kennedy talking about Megan Anderson? I feel terrible for Megan. Yes, we'll get to that second part of the question, but I hadn't even thought about the FBI situation. If you can get the FBI to sit outside a kid's house, you should probably find out what's in a bag that's breached a bubble in a foreign country. Kristen, what do you think was in the bag? We all have our own theories. What do you think?
I have no idea what was in the bag, but whatever it is for you to like Jason Bourne a situation, I imagine it's not that good and you're not supposed to have it. And I talked about this with some of our friends, with Anthony Walker and Jay Petrie, and they were theorizing that it aligns with the suspension of his brother. I think he recently got suspended by USADA for some banned substances. And some people were speculating that maybe that banned substance was what was in the bag. Because I think Ottman's statement was he was protecting somebody or something like that. So I think that makes sense. I have no idea what's in the bag. I have to be honest. I haven't been able to sleep properly without knowing what the contents in the bag were. I was hoping Dana White would shed some light onto that. But yeah, you would think, does Dana White have FBI agents like with him at all times? Because I would hope.
I assume so.
Get to the right. It has to be right. So I'd hope that they get whatever it was in the bag. But yeah, such an odd situation, especially one that cost you your job in the end.
Yeah, I also forgot Ottman's brother was still in the UFC until that USADA suspension came, because he hasn't fought since the Germany card that Anthony Smith knocked out Shogun, if I remember correctly. That's the last time I remember him fighting. And I know our colleague Kareem Zidane over in Bloody Elbow has this very long, extensive piece on Ottman's brother, so I don't have to go get into all of the background of said fighter. You can go find all that out. You can go find that all out yourself. It's pretty ridiculous, but I think it was IVs, personally. I have no idea. Casey, what did you think it was?
PlayStation 5.
Yeah. No, you said Nintendo Switch.
Oh, Nintendo Switch. Yeah, Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, actually, Nintendo Switch, because it's easier.
Yeah, and it's got that the little Pilates thing so you can work out in. Have you seen that?
Yeah, Nintendo Switch.
Those things are tough, man. Like the little circle. So, yeah, they're probably last-second workout, you know, so that makes the most sense.
Yeah, for sure makes the most sense. Anyway, Kristen, as the lone female member of this panel right now, what did you make of the clip of Casey Kenney on Sugar Sean? What is it, the Sugar Sean and Timbo show? Timbo and Sugar show? I don't know exactly what it is. It's what's his coach's name?
Welch.
Tim Welch. Welch, Tim Welch, yeah. If I remember correctly. And Sugar Sean, Arizona natives, which just bothers me to no end. What did you make of – you obviously saw the clip. What did you make of it? Before we get in, all people who haven't seen it, Sugar Sean was holding his newborn baby. I don't know if it was a son or a daughter. I apologize. And the beginning of the clip, he was talking about how he would try heroin because he knows he won't get addicted. And I was like, probably not a good thing to say when you're holding a baby. And his coach was like, yeah, yeah, because you're just mentally strong and won't be able to push past it. And then his coach asked Casey Kenney, who is fighting on the undercard of Megan Anderson's fight against Amanda Nunes, asking if, quote, I don't want to say the quote because it grossed me out, but basically asking if what his thoughts on Megan Anderson were aesthetically.
Sorry, I want to chime in real quick. So the clip was cut up from different parts of the show. So I actually watched.
I was going to get to that too.
I didn't want to imply that it went straight from that to that because it didn't.
I was going to get to that. It's clearly not tying in. It's a jump cut.
Yeah.
Casey watched the actual episode, so I was going to get his thoughts after. Okay. I haven't watched it, but Kristen, what did you make of specifically the comments of Megan Anderson?
First, I feel terrible for Megan Anderson. I feel like she's one of the very few fighters who minds her business, but somehow gets drawn into this stupidity a lot, and I feel really bad for her. She shouldn't have to be subjected to those kinds of comments. I'm also not going to repeat it just because I think they are gross to be making, especially about your, this is essentially like your coworker, you know what I mean? In a regular workplace, that kind of stuff wouldn't fly. I thought the question was stupid to begin with. I think that I understand what kind of pressure Casey Kenney was probably under to seem like cool or hip at that time. Like you just want to be one of the boys in that moment. But the easiest way to avoid any type of drama, especially when it concerns someone that you are going to be in close proximity with in a few weeks here, you're fighting on the same card. Simple no comment, or I don't think I want to get into that. I don't speak about that kind of stuff. And I think that would have been hopefully the end of the situation. I don't know if they would have continued to pester him for an answer, but he ended up answering the question and then proceeded to give a reason why, you know? So that's why I'm just like, oh my God, that was a terrible decision to make. And I thought that his acknowledgement of the comments on Twitter once Megan caught wind of it was, it's iffy for me. Yeah. It really wasn't an apology. Like, I'm glad that he acknowledged that he said something wrong. But when you are given the opportunity to kind of atone for what you said and you still don't say the direct, I'm so sorry, you'll say, I'm sorry that it offended you or it hurt you. You're not giving a real apology at that moment. I think Megan handled herself quite well with her statement. And it was good to see a lot of UFC fighters and coaches and stuff like that kind of stick up for her. And she doesn't need saving, but it was nice to be reassured that that way of thinking is not something that is all too common.
Yeah. And you mentioned Casey Kenney's apology. Did you see Sugar Sean's coach's response to it?
It was even worse.
Essentially, you said, oh, hey, Megan, I only asked a question because you're hot and Casey Kenney's like really short.
Wow, that made me feel so much better.
It was something to that effect. It was just like,
yeah.
I was like, what?
That's ridiculous. Just apologize and move forward. It's not that hard. You know, you offended someone. Those were deeply offended comments. And your easiest out is to apologize and go. But no, we have the, well, you're really hot. That's why I asked the question. I don't understand that line of that logic there.
You're hot, you know? So, you know.
I know Sugar Sean just got a fight. Is he also on that card?
No, I think that's at 260, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's a little farther down the line.
Oh, so it's the neck. Yeah. Well, they're both in March.
Oh.
That's what I was going to say, because there's two pay-per-views in March. 259 and 260. Yeah, 260 is the one where Casey Kenney is fighting Dominic Cruz. And 259, beginning of March, Casey Kenney fights Dominic Cruz. 260, Sugar Sean fights Thomas Almeida. Oh, boy. Anyway, Casey, you watched the actual clip. You actually watched the episode, right?
Yeah,
I did. I've never watched that show in my entire life. Not that I had anything against Sugar Sean or his coach up until recently. It was never on my radar. Mm-hmm. But as someone who sat through that whole episode, what'd you think?
Well, I did sit through most of it. It was, first of all, I want to point out that this isn't an excuse. It's just kind of give more setup. Before Casey Keenan was asked that question, they did like giant bong hits. And not bong hits, but this thing called a volcano. If you smoke weed, you know what a volcano is. So it's that big bag. So they were hitting from that bag. So I don't know. No, when you're stoned, you don't say stupid crap like that still. I don't know what the excuse is. But the host, I forget the host's name, Welch. I mean, he deserves just as much fault for asking just a stupid question, a very just unnecessary question. But all I kind of really want to add to it is fighters, media members, anyone, when you're on social media or anything like this, just I have a camera on me right now, the whole world can see me right now, don't say anything that you would never say to that person's face. That's all. Don't ask a question
Jed.
You would never say to their face. I just want to go to those gentlemen, like Casey Kinney, Sean O'Malley. Imagine Megan Anderson was in that room right there. Would you be saying the same thing? No, you wouldn't. You know, if you would, I would love to see that. I would love, but you just don't talk about people that way in such a disrespectful way. And I hope, and Casey Kinney, offer a real apology. Go, hey, that was stupid. I don't know why I said that. That was very disrespectful to you, Megan Anderson. You're a great fighter. You're a great person. I apologize. I am sorry. I'm sorry. That's it. And you know what? Move on. But this is dumb. So yeah, that's my thing. Don't say anything you wouldn't say to them and to their face.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh. Is Jose frozen?
Is Jose frozen? Jose! Jose. He's really thinking about this question.
Or he's just really disappointed. He has a disappointed father look.
Yeah. All right, we're waiting. There we go.
My back?
You're back, Jose.
I have literally no idea what happened. Yeah. I just refreshed my browser.
We just thought you were really like studying the question really deeply.
Yeah,
like,
man. I have to really think about this one. From MMA Fan 100 on the site, both Nate and Dustin should stay in their lane. Nate is not a 155er anymore, and Dustin still is. The media should do a better job pressing Dana White to explain why he won't add a 165-pound division instead of accepting no as an answer. When GSP walked away from 170, would have been the perfect time, but any time is a good time to make a positive change. With 165 and 175, there's extra title and more potential matchups, being a win for UFC headlines, fighting the fans. Come on, Dana, do it already. Well, okay, I apologize for not asking about 165-pound division in 2021, even though that's been a topic for, 3 years now? Like, I don't care anymore. Like, the answer is, when you get no 100 times, I think the answer is no. Also, when GSP walked away, it opened up the 170-pound division. There were a lot of fun matchups to make, so I don't think I don't see the logic in making the 165. Like, if they added it, great. But if they don't, okay. Like, I'm not going to be offended either way. So I know some fighters want it, but the reality is it's just not there. So I don't put a lot of mental thought into these hypothetical scenarios. But anyway, Nate and Dustin situation. Kristen, what do you make of I don't know if this is the question. If you have another question about Nate and Dana, like they're just kind of yelling at us for not asking about 165 pound division, even though it's been done 1,000 times. So Kristen apologizes. Yeah. Casey, you apologize too. Let's just do better at asking about 165 pound division, I guess.
My bad.
My bad, guys.
Sorry. Who was the last person to ask about the 165? Was that the schmo when we were at? Was it?
So that was the famous one when the schmo asked Dane about it, and that kind of lit the fuse for the schmo to kind of to where he's at now. But like Ben Askren's brought it up, Kevin Lee's brought it up, Nate and Dustin brought it up before they were supposed to fight at UFC 230. Remember they were tweeting about it. Ben Askren said we interviewed him in Milwaukee before his debut. It was the Iaquinta Lee fight. And because he was obviously cornering a lot of the fighters because it's the Milwaukee card. And he was like one of the guest fighters in the back. And his prediction was he offered to fight Colby in the January pay-per-view. Didn't happen. And then he was going to fight Lawley. He goes, I beat Robbie. I win the title. And then 1 year from now, I'm the 165 pound champion. That was his prediction. Obviously that did not happen. Now he's fighting Jake Paul, which I'm sure he never would have thought in 1,000 years. So yeah, the 165 pound question has been done to death. And Dana has said no 1,000 times.
Yeah, I think I'm on the same wavelength as you in that, like, I'm kind of resigned to it. If it does happen, I'd be glad to see it. If it doesn't happen, I'm fine with that too. I know a lot of people made like a big issue. It's not as bad as when there is so many belts, like in boxing, there's a lot of championships and a lot of belts. So I think that some of the complaint around adding like a 165, while it would be helpful for fighters so that they wouldn't have to cut weight too much or make the decision between 155 and 170, some people take issue with the fact that you're just going to add another belt into the mix and that's just already too much with what we have. So I'm fine with 165. I don't know if it'll ever happen. I still want like certain other divisions to pop up in the UFC, like an atom weight. I thought someone was talking about that as well. I think Dana was thinking about it. I don't know. There's a lot of divisions that could be welcomed into the UFC. 165, I'd be happy to accept it. But yeah, it's been a while since we've really like paid attention to 165. And as far as the Nate and Dustin situation, like Dustin said, it doesn't make sense for him to fight Nate, but I'm not mad at it. I'm definitely not opposed to it. And if it, I think with the recent comments from Nate saying like F a weight class, but he's still fighting at 170. I don't know what to make of that. But if Dustin were to move up in weight, which I highly doubt he did, I don't think it'd hold so much of too much weight if him and Nate were to fight at 170. If they did it at 155, it'd cause a lot of issues, but I don't know. It's just a very confusing thing.
Yeah. If they're going to fight, it'll probably be at 170. It is what it is. Dustin is a pretty massive 155er anyway. Nate is a pretty tall 155er. So don't tie up the division with these weird lightweight fights. They can go fight at 170. The rest of the lightweight division can figure itself out. Also,
would you put about the line with Nate and Dustin, almost like the Nate and Jorge thing? Like another BMF?
No, just have them fist fight.
But you could turn that into a whole thing because you know they're beefing. They've been going back and forth since UFC 230. It'd be fun to kind of see another. Well, no, a lot of people took issue with the play belt too. So I just think it'd be fun.
I'm all in on them fighting. I just don't think it needs a belt.
I still hate the BMF belt because it is called the BMF belt. No, it is the baddest motherfucker in the game belt. If you're the baddest motherfucker in the game, you don't say BMF. So you get it's okay if your corporate sponsors. It is the baddest motherfucker in the game belt. That's all
and
it is.
The baddest motherfucker in the game is being real picky in who he fights.
Hey, man.
Which I don't have a problem with fighters trying to pick fights for more money, but don't call yourself a badass motherfucker and then take like 2 years off and then not want to put it on the line. And then when he was supposed to fight Kamaru or Connor or whatever, they're like, would you put it on the line? He goes, no, this is 1-of-1. I'm like, it's boring. Okay.
I just wish these top guys would lay it out. Go, look, this is how much money I want, and this is how much money that the UFC wants to give me. This is why I'm not taking the fight. And just go, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, that's all. My favorite part about Nate Diaz isn't his old, you know, fighting style or his theatrics or his whatever trash talking, is that he's a guy who seemingly knows what he's worth. And I respect that a lot about fighters.
Yeah, I agree.
And yeah, everyone wants this 165 belt, and 170, the welterweight title will now be 175. So then, like, yeah, that creates a little situation for like guys like Usman. Does Usman go down or does Usman go up? You know, and does the UFC kind of say? I'm just saying, pretend Usman beats Burns, and they create this new belt system. Does the UFC, you know, automatically make Usman the 175 champ or 165 champ? I mean, it creates a little situation, but nothing in that can be solved in a, you know, a little board meeting. So
then I would like them to add 195 too. If they're doing 155, 165, 175, 185, 185 to 205 is a lot.
Yeah.
Cause then you get, yeah. So then 195 would be probably be good. And then if they want to add a 225 and then 225 up is heavyweight, I'm fine with that too. But that just means more titles for John Jones.
Yeah. That'd be fun. More titles.
I also don't hate the boxing belt system. I don't like the mandatories and the politics in it, and like, oh, if you don't fight this guy, you get stripped. But I love the image of dudes with just hella belts.
I love that image,
but I hate the politics behind it. Like when Anthony Joshua posted that photo of all his belts, I'm like, dude, this guy has all those championships for getting in a fist fight. Like, that is badass. That's the baddest motherfucker in the game right there. Anyway, he just needs that one green belt, which he won't get.
All right, here we go. Let's do this.
Joseph Boza, what about Stephen A. saying, said about how he thinks women shouldn't fight in MMA at all? Stephen A. Smith is a numpty, so that dude's a clown. I don't have nothing good to say about that guy. I used to really respect his journalistic integrity way back in the day when he was just a reporter, and I have nothing positive to say about that man now. Christian, what did you make of his comments saying he doesn't want women to fight mixed martial arts?
I mean, he's certainly entitled to having that opinion. If that is your preference, fine. But when you speak about it on a public platform and you are arguably the face of the broadcast partner for the UFC, where plenty of women's fights have happened and plenty of them, which are in the running or already considered as iconic or legendary, it just kind of discredits a lot of the strides that women have had to make. I think that a lot of the times women aren't taken as seriously as like the men are when it comes to fighting, and they'd have to go out and put on these wonderful performances to even get like an inch of acknowledgement. So for you to say that I don't want to see them punching each other in the face, well, you don't have to see it. You don't have to watch it if that's truly your preference. But imagine someone getting their like UFC or MMA information from Stephen A. Smith. Like your words have an incredible influence over certain people, whoever they may be. And to guide them in that way that women aren't seen necessarily as equal as men inside of the octagon is freaking stupid. It's an archaic way of thinking. You're entitled to thinking that, but that's just not how I operate, especially now in 2021. Are we still talking about this? Are we really still trying to justify a woman's place inside of fighting? I think they've done enough to prove themselves. So maybe just cool it with that. And I think the other part of the comment was about like intergender fighting. I'm not sure how he tied that into just women not fighting.
Seriously.
That's like, what?
I'm so like, are you talking about like in certain areas of the world, like the I don't know her name, but the girl that got signed to Bellator for beating that like 500 pound dude. I don't know if he saw a clip of that and just decided to tie it into that, but those two things have nothing to do with one another. So it's unfortunate that he's even making these comments right now, but I can't say I'm surprised.
Yeah, it's not something we haven't heard before, but it's like you said, it's 2021. I would agree with you. He's by far the most famous he's the most famous talking head on the UFC's broadcast partner. Shut up. Just shut up, bro. You don't have to watch if you don't want to.
Anyway, I don't get it. I don't like it at all. And to me, him saying something like that, I mean, switch out the word women. Instead, if he said, "Oh, I don't want to see Chinese people fighting in the octagon. You know, I don't want to see whatever some group of people fighting in the octagon." I just think it's just a stupid ass statement. And yeah, he kind of sucks. But whatever, he talks loud and he says blasphemous. And you know, I gotta watch his freaking commercial on ESPN Plus every 10 seconds in between rounds. And I'm getting PTSD just thinking about those spots I have to watch over and over again.
And like I said before, he was a legitimate journalist for a while, which is why it bothers me the most, because he was a respected journalist. Skip Bayless was a respected journalist. Skip Bayless was involved in that SMU scandal back in the day, and he did his job and he was really good. And I just feel like they got massive paydays and now they're just saying things that I am pretty confident they don't believe, which is even more of a disappointment.
This goes back to what I just kind of said about Stephen A. Smith and the Sean O'Malley and Casey Kinney situation. I want Stephen A. Smith to say that, but say that right to Amanda Nunes. Say that right to Joanna Jędrzejczyk. Say that right to Rose Namajunas. Say that to their face. Go, you know what? Get out of here. You don't belong here. I don't want to see it. I want to see that man say that to those women, to their faces. Because, so, like, I don't know. Like, it's just, yeah.
I mean, you saw the response from like Chris Cyborg and Angela Hill. They kind of shut him down.
I was gonna say, if I had to pick one person to represent, to go be like I'm gonna represent women's MMA while you say this to my face, I would pick Angela Hill because she would break Rick on Stephen A. And she's not gonna like all the women that you brought up. They all speak great English, but I want someone that can just go in and just like spit venom as Stephen A. Smith to his face.
I don't know. Angela Hill kind of pointed out that Wei Li had made the best argument. Shut up.
Yeah. She also, Angie tweeted in response to the Megan thing. It was all in good fun, but she's like, I can't chime in because back in the day I made a Twitter thread of men fighters that can get it. I was like, it's funny. It was self-aware and all in good fun, but.
Yeah.
Obviously. Also, shout out to Dean Thomas for the reaction to that. True story, Cynthia.
Yeah, that's right, Cynthia Vance.
Thank you much.
Me and Cynthia have had a pretty interesting discussion on our love of Mexico over the last few days.
Oops. Get out of here, Cynthia.
From Dane McClendon, Dax Edwards, 712 on Twitter, at MMA Fighting. Any thoughts on James Vick and Eric Spicely both getting KO'd in first fight since being released? Hashtag the A-side. So, yes, James Vick most recently got knocked out in, what was the promotion? XMMA, somewhere.
Yeah.
And then I didn't watch the Eric Spicely one. I did see Eric Spicely on Fight Island, though. Eric Spicely was a bummer because him and I are from the same part of the world, in Rhode Island, and Eric Spicely is kind of revered in the martial arts, specifically the jiu-jitsu community of Providence, Rhode Island. So a little bit of a bummer. I saw the James Vick replay, but Christian, what did you make of both men getting KO'd badly in their first fights after being released by the UFC?
Yeah, didn't see the Eric Spicely one. That wasn't on my radar. I'm sorry. I should probably go back and look at it. But the James Vick one was incredibly brutal. Like, I felt like that is just like a pit in my stomach kind of feel when you watch someone just get smashed like that. And to add on to the fact, I also saw the highlight. I had no idea that his mouthpiece had been gone for the better portion of that finishing sequence. And that terrifies me because if you saw his statement, he's talking about how badly broken his jaw is. And as someone who has jaw broke from side to side. Yeah. As someone who has willingly had their jaw broken for the sake of corrective surgery, I was under anesthesia I could not imagine having that happen to me in real time, like as I am lucid. So imagine that, having to deal with such incredible pain. I feel for James Vick, and I think it was the right decision for him to finally retire after that, because I think it was like a string of 4 knockout losses. He's lost in the same manner in the last couple of years. Granted, you could make an argument, maybe he should have stopped earlier, or maybe he shouldn't have been licensed to fight based off of those performances. But that, yeah, that is certainly a career ender, especially the extent of his injuries. That just seems all too bad.
Casey, what did you make of Vick and Spicy's first loss after being released?
Can't speak too much about the Spicy loss because I didn't see it either. I heard about it, but James Vick loss. Yeah, so that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 straight devastating.
And 4 knockouts.
4, yeah, 5 straight losses, yeah. 4 knockouts. And Paul Felder kind of put it to him too. It wasn't like, you know, he might have survived 15 minutes of Paul Felder, but you know, he might have been better off getting knocked out in the first round. But ever since James Vick unfortunately got in front of a mic and said, "That guy's Homer Simpson." Ooh, his life, his professional life went very downhill fast. Fights. The idea that fights outside the UFC are easy or whatever, like especially for these guys like James Vick and Eric Spicy. When you leave the UFC and go to a regional promotion, not like a Bellator or say a PFL where you're fighting guys from around the world, but a regional promotion. You are such a target. So these guys coming after these ex-UFC guys, like, ooh, that is a tough place to be. These fights don't get no easier once you leave the UFC. I mean, when Eddie Alvarez, when he left the UFC on a win, he got knocked out in like 30 seconds in his first fight and won, you know? So it's life's tough out there. Just because the cage don't have 8 sides don't mean the guy punching you ain't UFC caliber. But happy trails, James Vick. Enjoy your family and
A lot of people were, a lot of fans specifically on Twitter I saw relished sight of James Vick losing again.
Mm-hmm. I got issues with James Vick, but I don't want the man to get brain damage. And
I agree.
We have got issues with fighters, but like not that much of an issue where I want to see him, his jaw broken, all that kind of stuff. So, people are just mean. That's just being mean. I don't know why people are, like that.
Also, let's not forget, James Vick didn't start training MMA till he was 20, and he got to the top 10 of the UFC at one point. Like, not a bad career. So,
that's insane. Like, for as much crap that fans want to talk about James Vick, at one point in his life, he was one of the 10 best in the world. You know,
it's not crap about James Vick; it's crap about his coach.
Oh well, that's another story.
It's 100% his coach, and how he stood by him. So it has nothing to do with. There's a few things they point to, like the Homer Simpson thing when he walked out before fighting Justin Gaethje. He said, "I'm gonna change." He's like, "I'm about to change my life," and then he got knocked out. And he said some pretty weird things about on Twitter and stuff, but it is. 99% has to do with his coach, and we don't have to get into it. It happened in Kristen's part of the world who did the reporting. I think it was the Miami New Times or Miami, whatever, something like that. They did all of the legwork on that story back in the day. So yes, it is all has to do with his coach.
All right.
Cater's head coach Tyson Chardier's response to MMA fighting from Tristan Gordet, longtime commenter. Is this the first Tristan Gordet comment we've had? To MMA fighting, had any issue on what Calvin Cater's head coach Tyson Chardier had to say when speaking to Mike Heck regarding why he decided not to stop the fight against Max? Mm-hmm. In your opinion, do you think Chardier or Herb should have stopped the fight regardless of the fact that Calvin was fighting back due to the amount of damage Cater was taking? Chardier said when Cater sat back on the stool in between rounds, he was good. His eyes were clear and also coherent. Yes. Yeah, so if you haven't watched it after this, go watch Mike Heck's interview with Tyson Chardier, Calvin Cater's head coach, on the most recent episode of What the Heck. There's also an excellent write-up on it. I don't know if that's out yet, but if it's not, it's coming out soon. As Tristan said, Tyson Chardier did not stop. His reasoning for not stopping the fight against Max Holloway was because Calvin, every time it looks like Calvin was about to get knocked out or finished, he would land a clean punch on Max and a few punches back. So he was still in the fight. And then between rounds, he was coherent and not lucid and all that stuff between rounds. I would have no problem if he had stopped the fight at any point after the third round. But I get his reasoning. But Casey, what did you make of his response to the criticism for not stopping the fight?
Oh, I thought Tyson handled himself very well in the interview. I thought he laid it out because, like, dude, the most important thing that he kind of emphasized was, like, if there's anyone in the whole freaking world that cares about Calvin Kattar more than maybe his parents, is me. You know, Tyson Chartier. He's like, I've trained this guy for years. I've rolled with him. I'm like his best buddy, you know, like, and I care about this guy. I care so much about this guy, and I'm not going to let him get like long-term damage. And even, he talked about afterwards and stuff. He said when he fought other fights, he's like, he goes, yeah, you know, Kattar was way more rocked and kind of out of it after other fights. He said this fight is like, it was actually, he was remarkably lucid. Wait, is that the right term? Yeah. Sorry.
That's the one I used. If it's wrong, it's wrong.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. Oh, but I didn't have the other way around. But he was remarkably clear. He said he rolled a lot of the punches very well. He said Calvin's actually really good at that. He actually talked about how most of the damage he took was to the body. It was his cardio that was really hurting him. But no, I get it. We talked, you know, we do these interviews, and after the interview's over, we kind of talk after the interview, kind of off the record with Tyson. I'm kind of telling you off the record, but I kind of told him, hey man, I get it, man. Why are you getting hate? And as I was watching the fight, I was feeling the same way. I'm like, dude, stop the fight, stop the fight. But then right when you're kind of about to say that out loud, Kattar throws a hard shot and hits Holloway. And that's what made it very difficult. And like, if you even look at Kattar's numbers, yeah, Max Holloway had record-breaking numbers, but Kattar himself broke his own personal records for most significant shots. So he was hitting Holloway a lot too. And yeah, it's a tough situation, but what's important is Tyson is taking care of Kattar now. He's not, like, Kattar isn't even allowed to go jogging. Because even he doesn't even want that rattling his head.
That jogging. Happened to me when I got a concussion. I couldn't even like go outside because the sunlight would hurt.
Yeah. So he's taking so much care of him right now. The only reason I would say Tyson should have stopped the fight earlier is to get Kattar back in there for another fight sooner. But because of that, so much damage he took, Kattar most likely won't get a fight for about 6 months. If maybe, say, that fight ends in the second round or third round, maybe Kattar comes back in 3 months or 4 months. But because he took so much of a beating, Tyson himself is keeping Kattar from accepting another fight for at least, you know, 5 or 6 months. So,
and that's minimum. I would like a year probably would be more beneficial. I have some more thoughts on this, but Christian, what did you, I don't know if you watched it, but after hearing what Casey said about the interview, what do you think?
Yeah, I read the write-up on the interview, and it's always an interesting perspective when you're speaking to a coach, especially someone who has been there for Calvin for many, many years and knows his fighter the best. Obviously, it's easy for us to, as spectators, watch that and just think that, yeah, that should definitely be stopped. I don't know how you were feeling, Jose, because you were at cage side for that. You could have probably made the same argument, like, yeah, that should be stopped. But listening to Tyson talk about his fighter and the way that he was responding, like, he asked him what's up, he's like, yeah, I'm good, I'm fine, and I'm just like, that's true. But I am worried about this line of thinking that well, it could have happened like that. There's always the possibility for like a Korean zombie Yair Rodriguez-esque type of finish where you're just getting battered for 24 minutes and 59 seconds. And that one split second, you land something that could bring about the end of the fight. There is very much a real possibility for that. And Calvin may have had those opportunities with how heavy he was throwing his shots still, but I don't think that should justify the continuing of that fight. And I think part of Tyson's response as well was that he was kind of looking for Herb Dean to step in because he thought that was a very real possibility. He thought Herb Dean, the way that he was looking, was going to stop it, but ultimately that didn't happen. But I would hope, because fighter safety is a shared responsibility by the corner, by your teammates who are in there, and by the official in the octagon, I would hope that if you are feeling in that way that, oh, I think Herb Dean might stop it, I'd hope that you take that. And if he doesn't, I'd hope that you take the responsibility to be like, okay, well, then I'm going to stop it. But there was something in Calvin that Tyson continued to see, and he wanted that to keep going. But if you don't need to prolong a beating, don't prolong it. I think this was a great fight for Calvin as far as like step up in competition, but sometimes it's just not your day. I still think Calvin Kattar is in the top 10, top five of the featherweight division, but it just wasn't his day. And I would have hoped that his corner and the officiant would take into consideration his long, the long effects of it after that, because that's like a life-changing beating. You know what I mean? Like, he had, what injuries did he have? He had a few cuts. He had the broken orbital or something like that? No, I don't know. No, nothing broken.
Nothing broken.
But it was nothing broken by some sort of miracle. But I understand where Tyson is coming from. I really do. But just hearing his perspective as well as the referee's perspective. Oh, did you guys see the Joe Rogan interview with Mark Smith? And he gave his perspective as to why he also thought Herb Dean was right in not stopping it.
Who's Mark Smith?
Very much Mark Smith, the referee.
Oh, Mark Smith. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, very much aligned with what Tyson was saying, in that Calvin was still intelligently defending. He was still throwing. So I wouldn't have stopped the fight either. And I thought that was interesting as well.
In the moment when I was, and I agree with everything you guys are saying, and I agree with what Tyson was saying, in the moment watching it live in the arena freaked me out, because like 2 days prior, the Spencer Fisher article came out. That's literally all I was thinking about. That's it. But I get what everyone is saying. In that night when I was watching it, and I was like, God damn, this is on ABC. Calvin is taking insane damage. It's going to freak a bunch of people out. And it freaked me out a bit, just because that article was so fresh in my mind. Matt Brown brought it up. Paul Felder brought it up. A bunch of other fighters brought it up that week. And I was doing a lot of social media for it. So Alex Savas and I, so I had to watch that Spencer Fisher video a few times. And then that same day, did you watch the Jens Pulver reaction video, Casey?
Yes, I did. That was.
So like, I watched it backstage at the fights, and I was like, God damn, this is freaking me out right now. So in that night, I was a little stressed out about it, but I completely understand Tyson's response and Herb's response and everyone else's response. So I don't have an issue with it being stopped, but if they had stopped it in round 3, 4, 5, I would have been like, thank God. But yeah.
And then coupled with Dana White's comments, he said he thought Calvin Kattar was going to
I think that was, and I have no, this is all hypothetical, and I have absolutely, no one has told me this. It's just me kind of putting points together in my own brain. I think that came out specifically because the Spencer Fisher article came out.
Yeah.
And Dana did a whole lot of interviews about it, because shout out to Kevin Ioli at Yahoo. He pressed Dana on it. John Morgan of MMA Junkie brought it up. A few other people brought it up, and Dana was saying, like, this happens. It's a contact sport, this and that. And then now that it's on ABC, Dana's mic'd up. He's afraid, and take him to the hospital. Don't let him talk to him. He told he said that to him. I think it was Mick Maynard or Sean Shelby. I can't remember who. He said that to Hunter Campbell. He said that to DC. He said that to Calvin's coach. He said that to Calvin, and it was kind of a point of focus on it. So, A, if Dana White does feel that way, which I'm sure he does, good on him. And but B, I think that specifically came out because the Spencer Fisher article came out, and maybe he says that a lot and we just don't know, but I think there was a reason why that came out on YouTube. Just my theory, though. No one has ever told me that.
And the crazy, I mean, we talk about this, but remember that fight, Kattar, his legs never went wobbly.
It went wobbly once, but it wasn't like Kevin Lee Barbosa.
He took
a step back, leg kind of gave out.
Yeah, I mean, there was no point where Calvin looked out of the fight. That was a crazy.
Did Calvin get dropped? Was Calvin dropped? No. Yeah, none. No. Right? Yeah.
It's now Kattar in his next fight. I'm sure there's gonna be a much shorter leash if he's taking a beating, because 100%. One fight like that in your career, okay, 2-3 fights. Because we go back to Spencer Fisher. Remember, he had like multiple like war, yeah. You know. So Calvin's next fight, that's going to be the kind of, I guess, will be a lot of questions will be.
Well, Justin Gaethje has been saying for the last few fights, he's like, I got 5 wars left in me. And he's had 4 straight quick finishes. He's finished 3 and he got finished. So yep. Even he's fully aware of it now. Anyway, we talked a lot about that.
Speaking of Justin Gaethje.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Another question from Tristan Gardette on the site. MMA Fighting, do you agree with just... Also, shout out to... Remember, Casey, last week you were like, Tristan, can you break up your questions? And now he's actually breaking up his questions.
Paid attention.
Do you agree with Justin Gaethje's thoughts on the lightweight title picture, such a mess? He felt not only Poirier and Ferguson, but every fighter on the roster was disrespected, making Chandler the backup fighter for the fight against Khabib. I don't... For the Chandler thing, I think that was more a lot to do with the marketing and kind of signing this big-name free agent and giving him that spotlight that way. I don't think it was meant to be disrespectful whatsoever. I just think they were trying to build on Michael Chandler. I don't think that had anything to do with deserving or undeserving and vice versa. The lightweight title picture shouldn't be a mess, but we know it will be. I think Charles Oliveira's done enough. Mike, I don't have a problem if he fought Chandler. I don't have a problem if he fought Gaethje, any of those guys. But Khabib is retired. But, Kristen, what do you make of the lightweight title picture right now?
I think we're just as confused as I was a couple months ago when we talked about this. Like, I thought a lot of answers were going to be given after UFC 257, but now I'm just confused. I'm confused by a lot of the moves that are being made currently. And I think that a lot of people are operating under the guise that Dustin Poirier is essentially the champion, right? Like, he's the uncrowned champion, as he has given himself the title, which I completely agree with. He has to be like the number two lightweight at this point behind Khabib. And with Khabib and his looming relinquishing of the belt, which should be happening soon, I don't know that it will, but they seem to be dragging this on for a really long time. There's going to be a need to fill that vacancy. And for me, it makes sense that Dustin Poirier and Charles Oliveira get in there and scrap for the vacant lightweight title, which is why I was even more confused that they gave the offer for Michael Chandler and Charles Oliveira again on short notice. Like, didn't they do that already? And Charles Oliveira said, no, I'm not taking that. I can't cut weight that soon. I think it was at UFC 257 or something like that. They wanted that fight. Go ahead.
Yeah. What were you going to say? Yeah, no, I was confirming. Yeah, that's what happened.
Yeah. So he turned that down. Now they do it again. He's turned that down again because I agree with you. I fully believe that Charles Oliveira has done more than enough to earn a title shot. And if we're going based off of like meritocracy, definitely. Like, the kid's on a 7-8 fight win streak. Why wouldn't he be right up in there? But I hope this is not a situation where they're going to say, well, he keeps turning down the fights we're giving him, so we're going to move forward and it's going to be Michael Chandler versus Dustin Poirier for the vacant lightweight title, which Dustin Poirier doesn't even seem all too interested in because he doesn't think that Michael Chandler has essentially earned it in the way that a lot of other contenders has done. So, and then there's Justin Gaethje still out there. There's Tony Ferguson out there. I am confused, and this happens a lot with such a stacked division like the lightweight division. That always happens. There's a lot of confusion regarding contenders and who should be next. The answer is very obvious, but we know sometimes obvious isn't always what they go with.
I think Poirier-Oliveira is the fight to make if they want to clear up this title. Poirier's probably going to fight Nate, because everyone wants that, but I don't think anyone really has an issue with that fight if it happens, just because it's an awesome fight. And Poirier even himself said, I'll fight Nate, lightweight division, clear, fix itself, and then I'll fight whoever. then after that, it's Charles Oliveira versus fill in the blank. I think I don't have a problem if you fought Chandler. Don't have a problem if you fought Gaethje. Don't have a problem if Chandler and Gaethje fought, and then Oliveira fought the winner of that. I don't. I have absolutely no idea. Casey, what do you think?
Well, Gaethje's saying that that Dana shit on the division for Chandler being a backup. I think it's kind of ridiculous because Manel Cape was a backup for the flyweight, and like no one was like, oh, Manel Cape was shitting on the division.
I think that's slightly different because Manel was already scheduled for the card and then his fight fell through. So they just kept him on the card and he got elevated to backup.
Yeah, that's just Gaethje hating on Chandler. I think that's kind of ridiculous. It's like, dude, has a backup. As soon as they have a backup, the backup never fights. The backup has never actually fought ever in the history of the universe. So has it happened yet where like the backup fighter that weighs in actually fights? I've never actually seen that.
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah. So if you want to guarantee a guy not fighting, make him the backup. Otherwise,
even Joe Soto wasn't.
He wasn't back. He was just on the card. Yeah.
Neither was Iaquinta. Yeah. They were just on the card.
Just on the card. The title picture. You know, Kristen, you said the most obvious answer, but to me, the most, if you're going from UFC's perspective, the most obvious answer is the two guys that sell the most pay-per-views. And unfortunately for Charles Oliveira, he ain't that guy. He just ain't that guy. That's why the UFC keeps kind of throwing these kind of, fight contracts at him that they know he can't accept. So they can go, you turned down a fight, coward. You know, I guess that's how the matchmakers talk when we're not around. Ah. it sucks.
Someone in the comments saying Justin Gaethje was the backup. He was the replacement. He didn't weigh in as the backup and then got elevated the next day.
Yeah. So
for the Tony Ferguson fight.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't really understand Poirier's hate on Michael Chandler. That's kind of a weird one to me. But to me, if I'm Dustin Poirier and as long as I'm fighting for the belt, I don't care who's on the other side of the cage, unless you're just talking about dollars and cents, selling pay per views. If that's what matters, then you probably ask for Conor 3, for the belt. But no, that would be very disrespectful to the integrity of the championship belt. But I still think it's gonna be Poirier Chandler. I still think it's gonna be that. Not because Chandler has earned it more than Oliveira. It's just that's gonna sell more pay per views. Chandler's just better on the mic. Chandler's better at selling fights. And this is probably fine.
He played it perfectly. You knock out number 4 at the time at lightweight. Yeah. Then you get on the mic and you call your shot against Khabib Nurmagomedov, Conor, Dustin in this Ric Flair-esque post-fight interview. Some people enjoyed it. Some people thought it was cringy. I thought it was perfect. You got to utilize your mic time. He did that. And then he continues to do interviews calling out Dustin Poirier and this, that, and other. So Michael Chandler is probably up there.
I have a feeling it'll be Gaethje and Chandler just because Chandler's now talking about Justin Gaethje in the media and Oliveira's turned the fight down because it wasn't for the belt. And I would assume the UFC would take issue with that. So I have a gut feeling it'll be Gaethje versus Chandler.
Ooh, I'm fine with that.
Do you think?
Which I'm fine with.
Do you think that'll be, is that going to be just a three, like a fight night?
No, I'm talking for the vacant title. I'm talking
about the vacant title. Yeah. Vacant title.
Cool. I'm thinking it's Chandler Gaethje, which I'm fine with. World Series of Fighting, Bellator, throw down. It's like, because Chandler gave an interview, I think, with ESPN where he was like, Gaethje and Eddie fought. I beat Eddie. Eddie beat Gaethje. So, like, Chandler's planted the seeds. He's already said he's accepted the fight against Oliveira. So he's proven he's the company man. Oliveira turned the fight down because he wants to fight for the title. I have a feeling they're going to reward Chandler, and then the next man up would be Gaethje, and they're already planting the seeds, and then Poirier will fight Nate, and Charles Oliveira will be left out per usual, unfortunately.
That'd be crazy. So two guys from these B leagues who can't hang in the UFC are going to be fighting for the belt. I love it.
Yes.
Anyway. Hey, rapid fire.
How many fights does Conor have to lose before stop buying his pay-per-views? People will buy Conor's pay-per-views forever. He can lose unless he goes on a quote James Vick type losing streak. Then I would imagine if he gets to that point, he's going to stop fighting anyway because he already makes enough money outside of fighting.
Conor's value didn't go Connor's value didn't go up with the loss, obviously. Did he lose any value getting nope. knocked out?
Nope. Nope. Because he has two high-selling rubber matches now.
That's wild. That is wild.
Losing a rubber match, maybe, but like he has options now. It's 1-1. Because he KO'd Dustin. He got KO'd by Dustin. That sells it. And then the Nate rivalry is one of the most like heated in probably mixed martial arts history in terms of both in and out of the octagon. So, no, he has stupid money fights still on the table for him. Terrence Leverett, last year everyone was using shoulders between the cage after the Conor win. Last week on LFA, a few people threw calf kicks. I say this to say what will be the next underutilized trend to take over the MMA world. Well, it's not underutilized because John Jones has been using shoulder strikes forever. We've seen it before. Like that, he did that to Glover. We've seen the calf kicks a bunch. Like, look at Brett Primus. He did it to Michael Chandler. It's happened to Sugar Sean too with Chito Vera. It's happened 1,000 times. Front kicks became a big thing, remember, after Anderson. So, but again, it wasn't the first time that Anderson ever threw a front kick. It was the first time he knocked someone out with it. But Casey, off the top of your head, quickly, quote, what's the next trend to take over the MMA world?
I forgot what it's called. What's that thing Habib does where he kind of reaches around and grabs the wrist, your opponent's wrist from underneath? Does DC call it?
Dagestani wrist lock or something.
Yeah, Dagestani
like
wrist lock. That move, it's not as exciting and, you know, as a, well, not calf kicks are exciting, but, but I think it's just, and grappling, that move where they reach under and kind of hold that hand so more ground and pound rather than going for submissions. That's not really a very exciting answer, but I love the Dagestani handcuffs or whatever you call it.
Kristen, what's your answer?
I have even a less exciting answer. It's going to be foot stomps. Kamaru Usman is going to start the revolution of foot stomps. He planted the seeds already in the Jorge Masvidal fight. Don't be surprised if he starts using that shit again in the Gilbert Burns fight.
I love it. From MMG 2K20, apologies to Jose Youngs. Apologies about last week, Jose. It seems like my comment question regarding Fight Island last week on the live chat really riled you up. I really do appreciate the content you guys provide, especially during the last year where I am stuck working from home. Keep up the amazing work. Wasn't riled up at you. I was riled up at thinking about certain incidents on MMA fighting, on Fight Island, and certain media members backstage that didn't take their job as seriously as some of us and how seriously they should have. And that bothers me to no end. Not that I was there. It's being somewhere and knowing someone like Kristen, who obviously takes your job very seriously, like Casey, like Alex, like Mike Heck, and like Ant Walker, are not able to go to Fight Island, and they would put in not only the legwork, but take their jobs very seriously. And I think certain individuals there did not. But that is what riled me up, not you. So no need to apologize to me. You didn't do anything. UFC possibly not bring back Edson Barboza, from Tristan Gordet. Concerns that the UFC may not re-sign Edson Barboza. He's going into his final fight on his deal. Recent interview with Junkie said that UFC still has not contacted him for either another fight or a new contract. Barboza is one of the most exciting fighters on the roster. I would be stunned if the UFC let him walk. I wouldn't be stunned because we've seen Yoel Romero and Rumble Johnson and various other people get released. But, man, if he wants to go to Bellator.
Woo!
Oof. And they want to do a lightweight, and he goes back up to lightweight, and they do a lightweight tournament. Like,
that'd be fine. Or if you see Barboza in Bellator's stacked 45 division, because most of the guys are out of the tournament now. So you know,
I think if I'm Barboza, I go in at 155 because they just did a 145 pound tournament, and Patricio's the lightweight champ still, so. That might be tied up, so the lightweight just might be a faster. He might have to do as much weighting to get a title fight. Unless his brother unless Patricio vacates the belt so his brother can enter the tournament, and then Barboza, Patricio right out of the gate. But Patricio still has to get through Emmanuel Sanchez and AJ McKee, so that's no guarantee. But man, sign me up for all that. That's all. Those are awesome. Sign me up for Edson Barboza in a freaking Ryzen ring.
Yeah.
MMA fighting, why is Frank Edgar such a big underdog plus 130? I love Corey Sandhagen. Shout out to Colorado. Fedegar's last three fights are a win, a loss to Korean Zombie on short notice in Korea, and a loss to the rightful 145-pound champion Max Holloway. I think Corey Sandhagen's the favorite because he's looked really awesome in recent fights. He just head kicked Marlon Moraes. And I don't have a problem with Frank Edgar being the big underdog right now. I would actually, the betting wise, I'd probably favor Corey, but in my mind, it's much more 50-50. But Christian, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. I think that like recency bias really does play a role in people's betting favorites, I guess. And so Sandhagen has looked really good since losing to Aljamain Sterling. He's definitely rebuilt himself. And whereas Edgar, what was his last fight? Was it the Pedro Munhoz fight?
Yeah, I think it was a split decision. Super exciting fight.
Good fight.
Very close fight. So I think a lot of people are taking that into consideration and just, I don't know, I guess they're kind of leading out Frankie Edgar as like, let's go to the barnyard. You know what I mean? Old man, let's do that. And I hope they don't count anybody out like Frankie Edgar. He's still such a talent. So I think that's more about it. Corey Sandhagen just looks really good. And Edgar is one of those like past fighters who's still very good, but I don't know if he has a, like another title run in him.
I absolutely believe he does. I think this fight is a super exciting fight, a pick-em fight. It kind of sucks. This fight's only three rounds.
Especially in three rounds.
Yeah. I mean, I would love this fight to be five rounds.
If he wins, do they give Frankie Edgar a title shot? Or do you think he needs one more?
It depends how he wins. If Frankie comes out there and, you know, just destroys Sandhagen, I think it's a different story. But going back to this question about the line, I think people just forgot how good Pedro Munhoz is. That's all.
Yeah.
People just like, oh, it was just some dude. That he just beat some Brazilian guy. No, he beat Pedro Munhoz. Pedro Munhoz is a badass. And and Corey Sandhagen, he's had his bad losses too, you know. And I think people just don't know where Frankie Edgar is in this point of his career because at his age, he is quite the freak athlete to be a top tier bantamweight, a top tier featherweight at his, how old is Frankie Edgar now? Frankie Edgar's got to be, he's 39. I was just talking about Tyron Woodley being old. Freaking Frankie's 39 at a very lightweight class. So that's just rare. So, let's see if Frankie still got it.
I think the winner of Frankie and Sandhagen, or Sandhagen wins, I think he's deserves the next title fight. Because like even Corey Sandhagen was saying, because after he head kicked Marlon, they were like, if they give me the title fight, I'm gonna take it, but I don't want to skip over Aljo. So I think Corey wins. He gets the next title fight. He fights the winner of Jan and Sterling. And if Frankie wins, I want Frankie to fight the winner of Casey Kenney and Dominic Cruz.
I don't know. I just realized if Frankie wins and he wins dominantly or finishes Sandhagen, has anyone fought for three belts for three different weight classes?
I know Vitor.
Did he fight for 380? Did he fight for the 85 belt? Oh yeah.
Yeah, he fought Chris Wyman at 187. Yeah, I'm not 187, 184. Well, 187, 187.
No, he lost to Anderson Silva. He lost to Anderson Silva.
Yeah. So, and he lost to Jones, and then he won like one of those early UFC heavyweight titles.
So I think in the modern era, Frankie Edgar will be the first guy to fight three divisions, fight for titles in three divisions. So I do think that might be a selling point for the UFC. I do think I think Frankie Edgar is in a really good position, actually, if he wins a dominant decision, dominant victory.
Yeah. I agree.
From a selling point. Not just saying he deserves it more than the other 35ers. I got to look at the rankings again. But I love the 35 division. That's all.
Man, Henry Cejudo might even come back too. So let's put a pin on that. The bantamweight combo.
Hey, Dillashaw's out there too. He's coming back.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I keep forgetting about Dillashaw.
Oh, boy. Dillashaw.
Should fight Dillashaw.
Jeez.
Kale Sauce on Twitter. Thoughts on Eugene Behrman saying Izzy won't bulk up for his light heavyweight title bout with Jan, relying more on his speed and endurance rather than trying to match Jan's strength. So not surprising whatsoever. I think if it was anyone else besides Jan, they might take a different approach. But Jan is not the fastest. He hits he hits real hard. But it's different when you're fighting like John Jones, who relies so heavily on his brute strength, or some of these other crazy massive light heavyweights. But smart, not smart, Kristen.
It's smart. I have no problem with that. Honestly, I think that that's his bread and butter, the speed, the endurance, the precision. I'm totally fine with not bulking up to like some massive amount. I don't know how much that'd help him.
Casey?
Adesanya has 100 victories in kickboxing MMA at that weight class. So for the 101 or whatever, let's add some more muscle. So you're fighting of a body you're unfamiliar with. Of course, it's that'll be a bad idea. But just like John Jones got off super strong to fight OSP and he got super sluggish and it was probably one of his worst performances, even a victory. So very smart in Eugene Behrman to keep Izzy basically at the middleweight frame and speed kills. So
I'm also not going to question Eugene, who's been training with Izzy his whole life.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, what do we know?
Yeah, no. As someone who's never actually been in the gym with Izzy, let me tell you how it should be done. Yeah. Let me look at any last questions on the YouTube comments. Oh, important.
Ice King question: what flavor of ice cream, if used to in an ice cream can, would kill the COVID and lead us to the MMA promised land? Kristen, have you answered this question with us?
I have, and I told you my answer. You weren't too fond of my answer, but I don't really care.
Would you say mint?
Yeah, mint chocolate chip.
I like that answer.
Thank you, Casey. Jose's ridiculous. Wait, what is your flavor again? I thought it was vanilla. You told me that was Pizzi.
That's what Pizzi said, because Pizzi is from Ireland, where everything is made of potatoes and cabbage, so he doesn't know what flavor is. For a long time, I said my answer was cookies and cream or Oreo or whatever you want to phrase, but I asked this question to the City Kickboxing boys when I interviewed them before their fight at, I don't know, 254, whatever that fight card, 253, I don't remember. And Israel Adesanya said the Neapolitan, where it's chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, because it's three flavors in one. And I was like, fuck, that's probably the right answer. So I changed my mind. Israel Adesanya changed my mind because he is a much smarter man than me when it comes to ice cream. But mint chocolate chip sucks, and I am correct on that.
God, whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Oh, man.
What are your taste buds anyway?
Put me in a bad mood now. Jeez.
Yeah, right?
Sorry about it. Go have some mint chocolate chip and feel sadder.
Is Macy Shazan and Mario Renault off?
Have you apparently been?
That's
so.
That's according to our Slack channel.
Ah.
That was one of the fights I was looking forward to a lot at UFC Vegas 18. I think Macy is such a talent too, and yeah, I thought this was a perfect fight for her.
I thought it's a good fight for her too.
Apparently, Marino tested positive for COVID, so they're pushing the fight back. And Sadiq Youssef is fighting Arnold Allen in April.
Oh, that's a good one. That's
my God, that's a good one.
Oh, Marino, I think she was an anti-vax. I'm not sure about that one.
Marin Renault was someone posted a video of they had sealed up, like they had put tape around like a playground because they didn't want kids to go to the playground. And some disgruntled mom came and cut all the tape and brought her kids to the playground because you can't tell me I can't use a playground. And Marin Renault tweeted, I would have done the same thing. And I was like,
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if it was anti-vax or anti-mask or anti-whatever. I think it was much more like, you can't stop me from using this playground.
My taxes paid for that slide.
Something like that.
Yeah. That isn't, yeah.
I don't know, but that was also very early into the pandemic. So I don't know if she's changed. I don't want to throw under the bus.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God. I cannot wait till everyone's vaccinated so I can stop like rolling my eyes at certain fighters for their medical opinions. So I can just go, I like this fighter because the fight.
The key to that is I just don't look at people who fist fight for a living's medical opinion vaccinations and global pandemics.
All right. Okay. Well, we got our ice cream question. I think we're ready to play us out.
You playing us out?
Yeah, playing us out. We're at
all right. Well, for whatever reason, my speakers just there just got real staticky, so I can't hear almost anything anyone is saying. But this has been Jose Young with MMAfighting.com for another episode of the ASI Live Chat. Thank you so much, Christian. You know the drill, though. Plug, say whatever you want before we sign off this episode.
Thank you guys so much for inviting me back. I love doing this stuff with you. And to celebrate a successful episode, I'm going to go eat some mint chocolate chip ice cream just for you.
Ouch.
You can take your mint chocolate chip ice cream and put it right in the trash can along with pineapples on pizzas and raisins, because that's where all three of those things need to be all the time. Casey, what do you want to say?
Mint chocolate chip rules. Pineapple on pizza rules. Raisins do suck, by the way. I hate raisins.
Yeah, raisins are crap. Yeah, at least we can all. Kristen, do you like raisins?
I do not. Raisins freak me out.
Yeah, they're stupid.
Yeah, raisins are real dumb. Raisins are real dumb. Anyway, that's another the person that was like rude, and I'm like, whatever. Anyway, thank you guys all so much. We'll be back next Wednesday. Have a great weekend. Stay tuned for Virtual Media Day tomorrow on the site. Well, obviously, UFC is back in action this weekend with over in Volkov. That fight card rules. Maybe Christian will be on Between the Links again, and she can lose to me.
Down
0-1 with mint chocolate chip. Well, until next Wednesday, we're out.
Knucklemania.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the future of entrepreneurship of Prop G Pod, special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Sometimes doing business has never felt harder, but you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You can just use HubSpot, because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: high-quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.